Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-host, and with me today will be Jan Schenaeus and Dan Crawford from MAN.com. In this episode, we're going to discuss the 2-2 draw for Fulham against Hull City. We have much to talk about in regards to this match, but before I do anything, I always have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Mr. Janaeus, I know it's very cold where you are in Canada. How are you doing?
I'm icicle cold, but I'm delighted to be here on with you and Dan to discuss and celebrate a wonderful comeback yesterday.
Okay, excellent there, Janaeus. Dan, welcome back to the show. I look forward to talking to you about this match. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Russ. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, guys, before we go any further, I want to just mention this to everyone. I'll mention this at the end of the show. I just want to wish a happy new year to all the Fulham supporters around the world. And it's a wonderful time, I think, to be a Fulham supporter. I know a draw is just a point, but we have a good amount to talk about in regards to this match. So, Dan, you were there, so I'm just going to start right with you. Just get your opening thoughts on what you watched yesterday between these two clubs.
Yeah, it was a crazy game, Russ. We seem to be involved in quite a few crazy matches. And I have to tell you, I wasn't feeling confident at the end of the first half that we were going to get anything out of it. When you look at Fulham's record at Hull, you know, anyone who decided to go to the match yesterday must be a masochist, because Fulham haven't won at Hull for 21 years. They haven't won at Hull's new, lovely new stadium. Indeed, you'll remember that dreadful match around this time.
Oh, yes, I do.
What, 4 years ago? I'm not going to say any more about that match because it still makes me very angry and I'll just shout incoherently for the rest of this podcast. But yes, so, and we were sort of almost halfway on the way to a similar scoreline by half time.
I know.
And we'd offered very little going forward in that first half, so I'm sure both of you watched. And the transformation was quite something, but I'm sure we'll get onto that, which meant that the journey home was in high spirits, shall we say.
That's great. That's great, Dan. I was just going to ask you that. Did supporters leaving this match feel jubilant? I know, you know, obviously you won all 3 points, Dan, but when you come back from two goals down in a place, like you mentioned, that you haven't won in 21 years, it's got to feel pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, there's the whole argument of, well, should you be 2-0 down in the first place to a team that hasn't really performed for much of this year? And you can have that argument. But I think the mark of a good side is how they deal with adversity.
Absolutely.
And Slavica makes the changes very early. You know, very interesting listening to him, because in the press conference he said, well, I think this is my fault because I was thinking maybe I'll change it before the first goal, you know, because things aren't going very well and I was having that discussion. I didn't do it. But he makes the changes. And funny enough, I had an argument with a good friend of mine, an old school friend of mine I hadn't seen for a while, at half time, because he was raging that they'd taken off Ojo and Oita, and he thought that he should have taken off Sessegnon and Johansson. And he wasn't sure that Kamara should have come on. Of course, he was not willing to continue the conversation at full time after Kamara had scored those two magnificent goals to level the scores. But credit to Slavica, because we say sometimes, we've said, you know, he's a little slow to change things around.
Right.
He's reluctant to make a big change like that, but he made a big call there. And it got us going forward with real purpose in the second half. So you've got to give credit to the boss for that.
Absolutely, Dan. And we'll be talking about that. I'm going to read some of the quotes that you have on Hamian.com from Slavica when we go through the first half, because I think that they're telling on what he was thinking about at the time and the decision that he made that I think changed the match to give Fulham a chance to get something out of the match, which they ended up doing. Over to you, Mr. Janaeus. Dan said something that actually rang true to me. And good teams find a way to fight through adversity. And this was one of these matches. I know it's not all 3 points, Janaeus. And you predicted a victory. I predicted a victory. But Dan brings up the point. They did fight through this adversity. They did get something out of it. So we have to walk away feeling pretty good then.
Yeah, we do. But to be fair, we looked You know, Cabana had a chance just before half time, but we looked first half an hour, we looked lethargic, and a lot of this, the credit has to go to Slava for this one. For him to make the subs when he did, he must have thought about it a little while before, obviously, and said, look, this isn't going to work. I mean, the two goals were sloppy. And you could have made a case, with the way we were defending, he could have taken Callas and Ream off. And he's gone the easy option. He's needed to make a change. He's been brave. And unlike in amateur football where you can take two subs on and you off and then you can put them back on, you can't do that in a professional game. It was a brave move, and it paid off in dividends. And that's why he gets paid the big bucks. It was an inspired second half. I think with a little more time, we'd have nicked it. And in light of the way the scoreline looked after 40 minutes, 2-2 will feel like a very good result for us, and probably a loss for Schmoll.
All right, very good there. Yeah, so I'm going to go right back to you. You and I were talking about this on the preview show, that you wanted to see the same starting 11 that you saw against Cardiff City. You got your wish, so I'm assuming you were happy with what you saw.
Very much so. And there was no reason to assume that we'd come out to as flat a start as we did against a Hull side that got a decent result against Derby County, 0-0, but have struggled to score goals.
Yep.
And are precariously placed in the division right now. And are looking nervously over the shoulder, although the way the other teams are playing, I don't think there's any need. But where we had a really good opportunity to go up and get 3 points, and then before you know it, we're two goals down. Both are good finishes, but we're two goals down to a team struggling near the bottom, and we're not really creating a lot. And it looked like, all those fans that travelled northeast, how full of measures it to go down to South Wales and get a 4-2 win, and then go up to Humberside and be losing to Hull. I don't know, but it was a disappointing first half an hour or so for sure, and it looked like we weren't going to get anything out of the game.
Okay, excellent there, Yanis. And Dan, I'm going to go to you and definitely want your thoughts on the starting 11. But Yanis brought up a good point talking about the result, getting all 3 points against Cardiff City. And then you see what Fulham have done on the road recently against Sunderland, team struggling. And now here, again, we get a point, but struggled in the first half, did not play well at all in the first half, came out flat for whatever reason. Are we not giving enough credit to these teams that are basically fighting relegation at this point? I know it's only halfway through, and that we're pointing the finger more at Fulham. Should we be looking at teams like Sunderland and Hull City that have a good amount to play for? They're basically fighting to stay in the division. So I want to get your thoughts on Hull City, because I think we should be focusing a great deal on Fulham, but I want to get your thoughts on their performance in this match.
Oh, look, there's two teams you mentioned, Sunderland and Hull, right? You look at I don't think I did the post-match Sunderland. God, it seems so long ago, Russ.
Yeah.
I did the pre-match for Sunderland, didn't I, with you? That's the last time I was on with you.
Yep.
And I said then that Sunderland had a squad of players who were far greater than the position that they currently find themselves in. And you look at Hull's team yesterday in the match, right? I'll just go through it now, Russ, because there's some Premier League quality in there. They have a Premier League goalkeeper in Alan McGregor. They have a Premier League centre half in Michael Dawson. They should have a Premier League centre half in Michael Hector, but I'm glad that they teach him bizarre things in the academy of that club that shall not be named on this podcast, Russ, because he made a ridiculous tackle for the penalty, and I'm very grateful to Jose Mourinho and whoever else it was who taught him how to tackle like an idiot, because we're very grateful for that. They have John Toll and Jackson Irvine in midfield, who are top half championship quality footballers. Seb Larson has been around and done it. You've got Jared Bowen, who's now scored 11 in 21 games for Hull, despite spending quite a bit of time injured as well. And he's still only 20, still not even 21, I don't think. And Noah Dicko, who always scores against us. That's just the first 11. And then there's quite they've got quite a few players who are injured who could clearly add to that first 11. I'd make a case for McGregor and Marshall being better goalkeepers than Fulham have. The point about this, returning to the question, should we give more credit to these sides? We should certainly prepare to play them well and get ourselves organised, and I think we do. But I think you do have to question whether some of the players subconsciously thought, OK, this is going to be an easier game than Cardiff and we should be able to sort of ease our way into it. And I do think that the way Hull started by coming at us and playing football and being attacking and aggressive surprised some of our players. I genuinely do. And they didn't know what to do with it.
I'm glad that you brought that up, Dan, because that might be why they came out so flat. Maybe they were not expecting what they got from Hull City, and that took them a while to figure it out. And then, of course, you have Slavisa making the substitution because it was so flat. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because maybe they were overconfident going into this match.
Yeah, quite possibly. I'm not sure. I think it was more that we didn't cope well with the situations that presented themselves.
Sure.
You know, we didn't deal well with the movement from their forward players. And we bottled a couple of challenges in midfield. We just looked flat.
Yep. It's the best word to use.
We weren't able to, you know, I think Yanis called it lethargic, didn't he?
Yep.
And I think he's spot on. And we have to address that, because you can lose games in the first 20 minutes. We didn't here, but we could have been four or five down at half time. It's no exaggeration.
Yeah.
I totally agree there, Dan. It's a wonderful point. And Yanis, I want to get your thoughts on what we're talking about. Do you think that we're not giving enough credit to Hull City? I know how we both feel about Hull City, but Dan brings up some interesting thoughts there. What do you thought about what Dan just shared there?
Well, he's right. I mean, we didn't. It's part of the blame directed towards Slaven and the coaches, that mentally we weren't prepared for it, because we'd gone down to Cardiff, got a good win, and thought, well, look, they're 19th in the table. They should be fairly easy pickings. They've got some decent players. We know that, but it's still a long journey, you know, northeast, and it should be okay. But we just, the first half, it didn't click. It didn't click, and this was a Slava's decision on 40 minutes was a massive decision on number of counts, and it's going to have ramifications down the line. But I think the good ramifications. Okay. He was clearly a ticked off bunny, as the fans would have been. But you know, some would say, "Well, is it a desperation move?" No, he's seen two players. Well, the back central twosome weren't exactly covering themselves in glory, and certainly, I mean, Sessegnon was working hard by Ayute, and OJ looked lost up there, and he's decided to make the change. And it's a calculated gamble, because you could have injuries, you could have sendings off, and he's rolled the dice. And to full credit to him, two strikers came off the you know, the bench, fired up as hell, and they made the difference.
Yeah, it certainly did, Yanis, and we'll be talking about that in a little bit. But let's now get into talking about the match in the first half. And Dan, I'll have you walk us through some of the key moments. You had an opportunity early on from Hull City in the 11th minute, but thankfully Tonori was offside, far offside. But the flag came out very late. But that was just a little warning sign of what was to come, unfortunately. The one other thing that I want to mention when I was watching the match is that Dicko, and I'm glad that you talked about him, Dan, was extremely dangerous. And he always has been against Fulham. Making some really good runs, and I was getting scared, and obviously that pays off for them a little bit later in the first half. But he was dangerous, and that got me a little bit concerned. You have in the 31st minute, you have the save by Bettinelli on a free kick by Larson, but the match obviously changes with the first goal in the 32nd minute, as you were already talking about Jared Brown. He makes it 1-0. Talk about what you saw here, Dan, to in this part of the first half. which gives Hull City the lead here.
Well, the instance of the goal, Ross. Sorry, can you? I'm hoping you can still hear me.
I can hear you, Dan.
Good. The instance of the goal. There's a thing that happened right before the goal. We gave away a silly corner where it wasn't necessary because Dennis Adoy.
Why did you mention that? Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. I don't really know, Ross. Maybe I'm being harsh, but it seemed to me that Adoy came under pressure in the left back position, and he could have just put the ball out for a throw in, or he could have just kicked it along. He could have done anything with it, but he tried to, I don't know, like, he turned and he tried to beat the player and he couldn't beat the player, Torrell, and he ended up giving away a corner. And now, I looked at the Hull team, they have some very tall players, they have some very strong players in the air, and you don't want to give away unnecessary opportunities for them to make that dominance count. Especially as we'd already given away a number of free kicks, as you mentioned, Russ.
Yes.
Right. The whole corner was defended, you know, woefully. I don't think that's an exaggeration. We have people in positions who are supposed to clear the ball. They didn't clear the ball, and then when it comes back in like the third phase of play, I think it's Callas at the back post who plays Bowen onside. And now it comes about because a couple of people win really good headers, and I think Irvine plays it across. But I was struck by the fact that, A, we didn't seem to be marking anybody. B, nobody wanted to put a tackle in. And C, there were a lot of white shirts standing around in the six-yard box watching Bowen, who had acres of space to put it in. And I'm sorry, if you defend like that in this league, you're not going to get promoted. It's basic stuff.
Okay, excellent, Dan. I'm glad that you described it in that manner. Giannis, your thoughts on Dan's description of the first goal by Hull City? I agree with him 100%.
Yeah, bang on. I mean, Saba would have blown an absolute gasket at that one. I mean, you've got the... He's right. Adoy's given away the corner, which was soft. And, you know, you was trying to beat that first man. And it's a nice flick by Irving. It's a good finish by Bowen. But where was the marking? You might as well have stuck six mannequins in the middle of the box. And it was a soft goal. And Slava would have gone, oh, come on, really? Something that, you know, amongst all the positives we got, we're going to obviously have to look at is the fact that we conceded four goals in the last two games. And we will have conceded four goals in the last two halves, actually, if you can see. You consider the two goals Cardiff scored in the second half down in Wales, and the two that Hull scored. It was a soft goal, and you know, it made. And usually, if you look at the reaction, Bettinelli's furious with the back four. The back four just looking at each other like they've just met. They look in total shock, and you saw their reaction to the goal. They were absolutely ecstatic. So it sort of came out of nothing. It was a good goal, but very, very soft defending.
Okay, excellent there, Giannis. All right, Dan, back to you. Just 4 minutes later, Hull City make it 2-0, and this is, I thought, a very good finish by Dicko, a player that I always fear whenever we play against him, and he proved me right here, unfortunately, for Fulham's sake. But it was set up nicely by a pass by Terrell. Talk about this goal. I don't think there's much that Marcus Bettinelli could have done on this. I think this is just a good finish by Dicko.
No, there's not a lot Betts could have done. I felt a bit sorry for him, really, because he hadn't done much wrong in this whole sequence. But there's three things that we could have done to stop this goal. And bear in mind that you've just gone behind. You know, you want to see your players make an impression. And you're vulnerable to collapsing immediately after conceding a goal. What you don't want to do is concede another one. I think it's Johansson in the middle of the park. He sort of is there with Torrell when he first receives the ball, and he doesn't put him under any kind of pressure. That means with no pressure on the ball in that area of the centre circle, he could pick a pass. And you know, he's a very good player. Came through the Arsenal Youth Academy. Clearly, he's going to know how to pick a pass. My frustration comes with Dicko. He's quite fast. He's quite strong. But for me, he's against two centre-backs there, Callas and Bream, and they should do better. Okay? They know maybe he's a little bit quicker than them,
But you put a tackle in. You manhandle him if possible. You try and force him to go wider than his running line. But all he does is run in a straight line and finish it.
Yep.
You know, yes, it's a good finish. But, you know, are we not trying to get close to the guy? Are we not trying to shut him down? Could somebody not slide in, even if it's just to try and put him off? You know, it just seemed too easy, much like the first goal. And if you're going to concede goals like that, then we can kiss goodbye to getting in the top six. It's all, we've already made it hard for ourselves. But we make it doubly difficult when we just defend in a manner that would appall a Sunday League pub team, Russ. You know?
No, listen, these are all good points, Dan. And what's interesting is that this wasn't the only run that Dicko was making, like you said, just a straight line. And there were more than a few of these. And this one came off, unfortunately, for Fulham. So I'm glad that you diagnosed your thoughts on this. Giannis, do you agree with Dan on his assessment on this goal by Dicko?
Well, I think Dan's disrespecting pub sides, to be honest. I mean, you got two big boys in the centre, and one of them's got to close them down, and it's like they're following them out of a curbside chat. It was, I mean, no disrespect, it was a really good finish by Dicko, but we know he's a dangerous player. We know he's got pace, and we know he can finish. And it was just, it was such a soft, you know what? It was, to give the lad credit, I think was it Roland who put the ball through? It was a nice ball.
Yeah, it was
Toral. Yeah, it was a nice ball, and he's Dicko's running, and it's a well timed run. But one of these big buggers has got put a body in, and that's why I think when he made the double subbing, he could have been more justified to chuck those buggers off and going, well, if that's the way you're going to defend, he could have said, well, I'll bring Jarlow off. I'd bring Sessegnon, put him to bring back to left back. I don't know, put K-Mac at centre back, just to make a point. The same way as he talked about he wanted to get a reaction out of the team. The easiest option is always going to be to take the strikers off. It's going to have less of an impact. But he'd have been within his rights on the basis of that first half of defending and the way we defended those two goals to have taken Raymond Callas off. He didn't. But that second goal was probably a good reason why he could have done it, because he should never have been allowed that time or space to run on like that. And someone's got to put a challenge in, and nobody did.
Okay, excellent there, Giannis. All right, it's now time to talk about the situation that I think changed the match. And Dan, I'm going to read some quotes that you actually put up on Hamian.com. Recommend Fulham supporters going to Hamian.com to read Dan's article. He has quotes from Slavisa about the substitution. It is entitled, "I tried to shock Fulham with early substitutions," says Jokanović. So I'm going to read from Dan's article, and then Dan, I'm going to go to you and get your thoughts on the quotes from Slavisa. This is what Dan wrote. "The Fulham head coach hauled off Shea Ojo and Florida Ite with 5 minutes remaining the first half, shortly after Fulham had conceded two goals in 4 minutes at the KCOM Stadium. He told his press conference that the team's first half performance was unacceptable. Here are quotes from Slavisa. Quote, "We didn't start the game well. I made the substitution to provide a shock reaction. It wasn't a question of whether Shea Ojo was playing a bad game or the same for Floyd Ayite. Both players played very well in the previous two games, but the new people on the pitch gave the side new energy, and in the end, Abubakar Kamara scored two important goals. A big credit to him." And now back to what Dan wrote here. Dan wrote this: "The Serbian was critical of Fulham's labored start, which contrasted sharply with how the Whites attacked Cardiff from the off on Boxing Day." And here are more quotes from Slavisa. Quote, "We didn't have a lot of energy at the start of the game. I used the same 11 as I've used against Cardiff. We didn't have control of the ball enough, and we were moving slowly in the first 45 minutes. It was urgent for us to change things, and we did. With these changes, it gave Tom Kearney, Stefan Johansson, Ryan Sessegnon, and Ryan Fredericks more space, and they had more energy. Thankfully for us, the changes provided a little bit of a shock, and we came away with 1 point. But if we want to be chasing the targets we want to reach, we cannot show such an up-and-down performance that we did today." One last thing that Dan wrote: "The Fulham boss praised his players in the spirit that underpinned their second half fight back." And here's one final quote from Slavisa. Quote, "We found the situation with the penalty early in the second half. We scored the goal and then We tried to take it step by step. It wasn't an easy situation, and I give a lot of credit to my players. They reacted well in a complicated situation in the second half. Okay, Dan, first of all, thank you very much for getting those quotes from Savisa and putting it in your article. Like I mentioned, please go to hamian.com to read Dan's article. But, Dan, I want to get your thoughts on this substitution. Obviously, I believe that this was key to Fulham getting back in the match. You wrote what Savisa thought about it. So share your thoughts on the substitution and also the commentary from Savisa Jokanović about his substitution.
Yeah, so those quotes are from the press conference. And in the discussion with the written press, which is in the paper this afternoon, this morning I've just picked it up. I'm just going to read you the extra bit that they put in there. Hold on, let me just get it here. Yeah. He also said, the journalist writes, Jokanović was candid about his own failure. And the quote from Slavica, it was my mistake. I'm thinking before they scored the first goal, do something and try and get some reaction. But I didn't do enough fast enough. Then he says, Abubakar scored two very important goals. And credit to him too. He was excellent. Look, he had to do something. I understand what Yanis is saying, in that he could have taken off the centre halves. Right. But, you know, you've only got Marcelo Jalom on the bench. And, you know, Marcelo is a very nice man, but I think we've still got some doubts about his ability at this level to play a whole. Well, I certainly have. To be effective. You know that Kalas and Ream, for the most part, are excellent defenders who aren't going to mess up. Clearly, what you needed was more energy in the final third. And Kamara, to be honest, he has a point to prove. You know, he's been brought in for significant money, and he's learning his way in the league, and he'll be eager to take his opportunity. So it was absolutely right that you should make the changes. I mean, the problem is you could have replaced all 11 players. you know, obviously you can't do that, but they would all have been candidates to have been taken off. So I don't think, and you obviously have to replace players with people who can make an impact in those positions. And he chose the right players, because we'll talk about Kamara a bit more, I'm sure. Yep. But Cavani made a real impact.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, Dan. I'm sorry to cut in, because I was going to mention that. And I'm also going to mention later on when we talk about Lucas Paez, on all three substitutes made impacts, and Cavani definitely made an impact.
Yeah, I mean, and Cavani could have, Yanis has already said, Cavani missed a header. He felt he should have scored at the end of the first half. But the fact that he jumped so high, I'm still astonished that a guy who's quite so small can jump so high and so well. But equally with his running and his movement in the second half, he caused a real problem. So you introduce two players who are keen to try and get a starting place. And they showed exactly why they should be considered for starting against Ipswich. And it was exactly the sort of substitution that previously people have castigated Slavica for not making. So it was a surprise to see him do that so early, but it really paid off for us.
It did, Dan. But at the time, you're there. Did you think it was just your initial reaction? Did you think it was the right move at that time? Just after they gave up the two goals, were you thinking, okay, I like the fact that he's doing it now and not in the second half?
Yeah, because you've got more time to... my actual reaction, I just said something that I won't repeat on a family show about Floyd Aiete not running to chase the ball down.
Okay.
You can guess that I wasn't very pleased with that, Russ. You know, I felt you had to make that impact. I felt it had to be in those positions. And it was good that it was before half-time, because it gave them a lot of time to influence the game.
Great point. It's actually a very good point, because I was thinking when watching this, the timing of it, people have questioned the timing of it, but he's done this before. He took off Stefan Johansson last season. He took off Ragnar Sigurdsson. So it's not like he hasn't done it before. He has done this before, but it was a little, you know, again, people looking at it like, why is he doing it now? But I'm actually glad. And like you said, Dan, it gave him more time for these players to acclimate and get into this match. So the timing of it actually worked real well. Giannis, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on all of this, the substitutions, the commentary from Dan, the commentary from Savisa. What are your thoughts on this double substitution by Fulham?
Well, the mark of a good coach is one that, for me, and you so rarely see it now with Premier League coaches and even coaches around the world, is they, to admit that they've made mistakes. You just don't see that. And it wasn't so much with the lineup, but he's realised he needs to do something. And he's sort of, he's pondered on it and he's waited, and then it's been the tipping point and he's decided to do it. I think that the ramifications in many ways are seismic, because he's taken Ojo and Aite off and he's taken them off before half time. So he's brought the two lads on. Now, from a player's standpoint, from Aite and Ojo's standpoint, they've been subbed after 40 minutes. So they've had to sit through that in the second half. To be subbed before half time is embarrassing, and they'll have known they weren't playing well, but there's also perception of how they're seen by their teammates as well as their coaches. So in the second half, they're watching that fight back, and you know, it compounds itself as well. So I think it turned out to be a masterstroke, because not only did Kamara and Cabana have a big impact on the second half, but you got two very angry young men sitting on the bench who were subbed early, and then the game turned around while they were sitting on the bench. And if that isn't, I mean, the move was to motivate the team, but the two most motivated players haven't been given the chance to show how motivated they really are, and they were sitting on the bench. And that's why for Tuesday night's game against Ipswich, I would be surprised if Ojo and Aite didn't start, because they're going to be flying out of the traps. You know what professional athletes can be like at times. Some would say, well, for doing that, you know, you could almost feel disrespected by being subbed that early.
But I was going to ask you that, Giannis. Yes. Do you feel that then maybe that's going to be some motivation for them? But you've already said that you
big
believe
time.
That.
Oh, big time. They'll be majorly, royally pissed off at this, because they will feel it's embarrassing in front of the teammates, embarrassing in front of the travelling supporters, embarrassing in front of the home fans, because they'll have had something to say about it. And they'll want to put one back on the coach. And to be fair to Slava, he's got it right. But that doesn't mean they don't want to prove a point. And they will prove a point, because Ojo and Aite have played well for the last few games. They just didn't play well in the first half, and he felt he needed to make a change. So if he wanted to stick a boot up their ass, he certainly did it the right way, because I'm expecting them to be flying out like greyhounds Tuesday night, assuming that they do start. It was a masterstroke on a number of levels, because we got the comeback we wanted. The tactical change worked. Camo was superb. So was Cabana. And you got two strikers on the bench who were pissed off because they were subbed and now going to want to prove a point. And this is even before the transfer deadline window opens tomorrow, right, where we know we're probably going to bring a striker in. And now you're going to have another player that you're going to have to compete with.
Yeah, it's right back to you. Dan actually brought up some quotes. He found some quotes that basically, paraphrasing, but Savisa is blaming himself for potentially not doing this earlier. What are your thoughts on that? He's actually putting the onus on himself.
Brilliant coaching. Brilliant coaching once again, because, you know, most coaches wouldn't do that. He's magnanimous enough and has the balls to say, you know what, and excuse my German, our shit didn't smell. I'm responsible for this team. I should have made a move earlier. I knew we had problems earlier. I procrastinated about it. And by the time I finished analysing the situation, we were two bloody goals down. I take responsibility. I made the subs. Thank God we got back into it. But I wasn't happy early on, and I made mistakes in not bringing the subs on earlier. I think there's, you know, most coaches won't do that. For the naysayers, Slava naysayers out there that moan and groan, you know, would you really want anyone else? How many coaches can you think of going back in all the years I've had the balls to say, you know what, my bad, my screw up, my lineup, my tactical change, you know, I waited, I pondered, I dithered, you know. No, you wouldn't see that. So all credit to Slava. This was down on him. He admitted mistakes. And to be honest, I mean, you motivate him before the game, but when you cross the right white lines, you still got to play. He can't run and tackle for them. He can't close space down. He can't stop the flick. He can't pick up, you know, he can't pick up Bone in the near post. He can't stop Dicko on his run. So there's only so much he can do.
No, that's a good point there, Yanis. And I'm glad that you talked about that because I, you know, it's funny. I don't know that many that will take the personal blame. And I actually like that. I think that shows character from the head coach to be able to say, listen, this is on me. I did this. You know, I should have done things a little bit differently. I'm paraphrasing, but I like that because I like someone that is willing to admit a mistake. Not everyone does that. So, Dan, thank you so much for mentioning that. I was not aware of that quote. So thank you for sharing that. We could talk about it during the show. All right, let's now transition. Let's talk about the second half. And, Dan, I'll go to you and talk about the penalty in just a second. But before we do that, just want to mention that Hull City actually came out strong, and Dicko actually had a shot that was saved by Bettinelli to start the second half. But then we go in the 48th minute, and we have to talk about this. You've already mentioned this, Dan. This is, I guess you could say, a favor by Hector, because I don't know if he needed to do – well, I don't think he needed to do this. This is a nice favor to help Fulham back in the match. He brings down Kamara, and if Kamara's – and if he just waits just a couple steps more, he's probably outside of the box, but he's inside the box. He gets the penalty, and he takes it, and he scores. Let's talk about this whole situation in the 48th minute, Dan. Your thoughts.
Well, first of all, it's a lovely ball from Kenny. And he spots Kamara making a run. And then what I like is he committed wholly to the run because I don't think he was the favourite to reach the ball. When he reaches the ball, you look around, there's nobody with him. There's nobody in the box for him to cross it to. So he has to do it all himself. The defender is the favourite. All he's got to do is hold him up. And Abu is... let's just say, an interesting footballer because he will never do the conventional thing. And I don't think sometimes he knows quite what he's going to do next. So I can sympathise in one way with Hector. It was really weird. You said it. Like, he went into the box and the defender makes the tackle at exactly the wrong time because he's just about to go out of the box. In fact, he falls out of the box. I mean, it's clearly in the box for that. But why are you making a tackle there? I don't understand it. I mean, I'm not complaining because thank you. But there was a moment of absolute joy, followed by a moment of sheer panic, where the guy in front of me was like, Slavisa, make a change, make a change. Get Norwood on, get Norwood on. Because Norwood could take the penalty.
Right.
And then you looked at it, and Johansson has the ball. And Kamara looks at Johansson and points to himself to say, I want it. And so he gets the ball. And it is a magnificent penalty. You could write a whole short story just about the beauty of that penalty. Because it is perfect in the top half of the net. They always say they're the most difficult one for the goalkeeper to save. But they also take a good deal of confidence to put it there because you look like an idiot if you hit it too high. And clearly, he had no doubt he was going to score because he didn't even look at the referee or the goalkeeper. He just stood there, waited. Thank you very much. Right, let's get the ball back and let's go. And of course, we saw at very close quarters his gun AK-47 celebration, which is very good. And I was very glad to see it again later.
Okay, excellent there. Dan, Yanis, over to you. Your thoughts on this whole scenario as well.
Absolutely brilliant. If I'm Nigel Atkins, I'd have blown 17 gaskets. Like, what are you doing? I mean, Kamara's going nowhere and you've taken him out. And now you've given us a lifeline. And I couldn't stop laughing. He's gone, he's grabbed the ball, he's gone, oh, it's my penalty. None of you dare come near me. I'm bigger than you. He's taken it, he's put it on the spot. He knows where he's going to put it. Confidence, you want players like that. And he's thumped it into the top left-hand corner. And then he's done his AK-47 celebration. Marvellous. And at that point, so quick, you know, the psychology of scoring, you know, getting one back just after the half is brilliant for us. Then he gave us some time, you know, to really start attacking Hull. And we did. It was one. The penalty that we did get, though, I mean, it just, I don't know what the defender was thinking there. But luckily for us, he did think, or he didn't think. And it was finished with absolute aplomb. And I remember gentlemen and gentlemen saying, well, Oliver Norwood's out there. Oh, my God. If we're thinking that we've only got one player in this team that can take a penalty, we're in real trouble. But he's absolutely cracked it. And
he showed a lot of confidence by taking it and then scoring. I mean, that to me shows a player that believes in himself.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of confidence there. And I mean, he had an excellent second half. You think he played for 50 minutes plus, and he was our best player on the pitch. He caused total mayhem. His speed and his power, and sometimes he doesn't think he's a young pup, but he's terrifying when he's coming at defenders, and he's still growing into his body. You know, he's not close to physical peak yet. And he's learning about the championship game, and that does take time. And but if yesterday was the coming out party, then absolutely fantastic in terms of what we've got to look forward to, because he was a menace in the second half. Just he tore them with ribbons.
Absolutely, Giannis. And Dan, I'm going to go back to you. Before we talk about the goal, I'm just going to just share some key moments, but I want to get your thoughts on everything leading up to the goal, because this is when Fulham really started to come into the match, obviously scoring the goal, and then they had several opportunities to score, if you want to call some of them half chances, but they definitely were putting the pressure on Hull City. In the 53rd minute, Cabano almost got the equalizer, but McGregor does enough to affect the shot. You have that opportunity. Then Cabano comes back in the 66th minute with another shot. Then you have the situation in the 74th minute when Kamara whips across by the face of goal, but unfortunately Sessegnon could not get there. That was another opportunity. Then you have Piazon coming on from Odoi. I definitely want your thoughts on that, Dan. And only 5 minutes later, McGregor denies Sessegnon, and then Kamara's shot goes wide. More of these opportunities, but Fulham were definitely putting the pressure on Hull City. So I just want to get your thoughts of the second half, all leading up to the goal, and then we'll talk about the goal.
Yeah, look, I think we were just we're playing some nice football, but this is where when Jokanović says, you know, we need to be more clinical in the box, he sounds like a broken record, but you might as well keep repeating it because, you know, again, we had enough chances to win two games yesterday, and we've only managed three shots on target, I think it is, Ross.
That's correct.
You know, so one of them was a penalty, which you hope is going to go on target, but with Fulham's record, you're never sure, right? One of them was the goal, and the other one was the save by McGregor that you just mentioned. The two chances that crystallised it for me, the one from Cabano, where I think Cess plays it through and Cabano's sort of in on goal, but
yes,
quite close, and the goalkeeper comes out. And then you're in that position of you have to lift it very quickly over the goalkeeper, and yet you can't lift it too high because it needs to dip very quickly. And he just didn't quite get it right, and you could see he was angry.
Yeah.
He then had a chance where McGregor makes a good save from him and it comes out to Kamara, and where Kamara just needs to be a little more, a little smarter is to take a touch in those sort of instances or to control his emotion, because you do it when the ball comes from him in the box, and I love him for it, he's just like, oh, there's the ball, I'll swing my leg it and see what happens, you know, and unfortunately, that was quite a bad miss. What you like about the guy is he was determined to get another chance.
Sure.
And we'll talk about the goal in a minute, but obviously that came along. My one frustration was the one that McGregor saved was the shot from Cabano, where we did really well to work an opening down the right-hand side. And there were two white shirts at the back post, one of whom was Kamara. And Cabano goes for a shot. And I'm fine with him shooting from there, but he's got to go across the goalkeeper. Giannis and I have talked about this before.
Yeah,
in those type of positions, Giannis, you're always taught to shoot across the goalkeeper because it might bounce off the goalkeeper and go somewhere. Near post is too easy for the goalkeeper. He'll save it 9 times out of 10. But the broader point was we were suddenly playing the football and it looked like a totally different game because we were applying a lot of pressure to Hull that The one thing I have to mention, Ross, and you may come to it, is Marcus Bettinelli makes a magnificent save.
He did.
At 2-1 from Jarrod Bowen with his feet after a shot was deflected into Bowen's path, no more than sort of 10 yards out from Dicko. I mean, I watched it again, and I don't really understand because he puts his feet in there and does brilliantly to get it away. But without that save, you know, 3-1 at that point, it would have been game over, definitely.
Absolutely, Dan. I'm glad that you mentioned that. I was going to mention that as well. In the 70th minute, you have that save because without it, we're not talking about a point for Fulham. So very good point by you. All right, Dan, let's now go to the goal, and then I'll go over to Giannis. I'm going to call this a team goal because so many people were involved. I know, obviously, Kamara gets the goal, and it was a wonderful goal. But this was so many players got involved in this. It, you know, again, I'm not even naming everyone else on the entire play, but we're talking Kearney to Johansson to Piazon, who I thought made an impact. I want to mention this. A couple times I thought Lucas Piazon made an impact. I'm glad to see him back. But it finally gets to Kamara, Dan, and he puts it in the back of the net. So let's talk about this goal. I'm calling it not just a Kamara goal, but a team goal.
Oh, it was a beautiful goal, Ross, because this is the one-touch passing football that when we play it,
oh, it's beautiful.
It makes us look even better than like Barcelona. I see a BBC reporter apparently yesterday called it an Arsenal goal. And I quite frankly think that's disrespectful. Currently, we're far better going forward than Arsenal. Ask any frustrated Arsenal fan. Indeed, they're about to kick off in like half an hour's time or something, aren't they? We can all watch. But it was a beautiful goal because Fredericks does really well to get down the right and make the early opening. It gets sort of half cleared. And then Kenny and Johansson interchange passes. And it's at this point, you know, we love a little pass on the edge of the box, but you're asking for a bit more penetration. And Johansson gets it into Piazon, who does really well, Lucas.
Absolutely.
And we should mention how wonderfully well, how great it is to see him back out there running around and making the impact in the game. Because he plays a little pass almost without thinking about it to Kamara. And Kamara shoots first time.
I know.
First time. And he doesn't blast it, Russ. He knows exactly where he wants to put it. And he sort of strokes it into the bottom corner. And my view was obscured by a slightly large gentleman standing a couple of rows in front of me. So I didn't actually see it go into the net. I saw it on its way. And I knew that it had gone in because this guy jumped up and down, jumped up an extraordinary high way into the air. Then there was a massive bundle. And we all realised that we all celebrated the goal. But it was a wonderful, magnificent, beautiful finish from a guy who, let's remember, several people on the internet, some people on a rival podcast, Russ, described as the worst Fulham striker ever to pull on the white shirt, which was a scandalous comment at the time. And it looks even more laughable when he does things like that. Brilliant from Kamara.
Absolutely.
And you're right, an absolutely wonderful team goal.
Absolutely. That's why I wanted not just to talk about him. I'm glad that he scored the two goals, and I thought this goal was fantastic. But it's the entirety of the goal, all the players that were involved in it, and I'm glad that you went through that, Dan, because it really just showed how well we can play at times. I mean, we can be devastating at times, and this goal showed that to me. Giannis, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on the goal, and if you want to share anything else about the second half, please feel free to.
Well, it was a magnificent goal, and Dan is absolutely right. I don't want anything to be compared to the arse. We are Fulham. We are not arse. That's for sure. And the goal itself was, if Messi had scored it, everybody would have jumped off their seat and done headstands. But it was. I think I put it on Twitter that it was filthy. It was a filthy goal. He's taken one touch and he's passed it into the corner. McGregor has stood. He stood like an ex-girlfriend being told that she was going to be paying the bill for the dinner. Just rooted. It was a brilliant, brilliant goal. And that one-touch football was sublime to watch. It's how we can open teams up. And, you know, I bask in a little bit of self-glory here because two more players than Kamara and Font have taken some awful stick in recent weeks. Betts has been another one. It's an awful stick. I'm brilliant leg save in the second half. Save us from going 3-1 down. These are good players. Quality is permanent. It takes, especially for Cameron Font, it takes time. You know, you saw that goal that set up the third one, the Sessegnon one at Cardiff. The ball from Font was sublime. You know, it does take time. Font didn't come off the bench. But you've got to give these kids time. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. And they've been signed from both players of what they can do. And that finish from Cameron was absolutely... What a lesson to strikers that you don't have to thump a ball at 180 miles an hour through seven players to get it in the back of the net. All you got to do is, you know, right time, right place, right speed, right angle.
Exactly.
Beautiful exactly. goal. Beautiful goal. And no more than we deserved. We'd done most of the attacking in the second half. And really, at the end of the day, in the last, you know, 3-4 minutes plus injury time, they were holding on. And this might turn out to be a vital point for them. They may say, well, we've got 2 points out of six against Derby and, you know, Derby and Fulham, and we've done okay. But it was a lovely goal. Lovely goal.
Okay, excellent. And Giannis, I'm glad that you talked about the end of the match, because I did feel that we were becoming even more dominant. They were at the very end, I think, had an opportunity. But for the last, I want to say, 5 or 6 minutes, it was the majority of it was Fulham pushing, and we ended fairly strong. So I'm glad that you brought that up, Dan. Before we talk about the player ratings that you wrote about, I just want to ask you just quickly: is this the right result? Is it a fair result based on what you watch?
Yeah, I think so. Hull were dominant in the first half; they were by far the better team, and Fulham were by far, you know, similarly dominant in the second half. So I think a draw is a fair result. Giannis is absolutely right. You know, we could have won it in stoppage time.
Absolutely.
And I think you have to be sort of quite pragmatic about this, because there's not a lot of time to dwell on these performances and these results come, you know, before the next game. And you have to take the positives, accentuate the positives. Positives are, Jokanović made two changes that dragged us back into a game we had no right to be in after an atrocious start, and we ended up on the front foot. Now, if we can just avoid giving teams two-goal starts or leads in games, then we'd be a very serious proposition to work with. Now, we're, what, 5 or 6 points off the playoffs at this point? So I don't think there's doom and gloom. I think if you look at that run of fixtures where we've got 7 points from those last 3 games, people would have taken that 2 weeks ago. You probably wouldn't have had the results in that order. But we've got seven points from 3 games. You know,
that's right.
That is the kind of run we're going to have to put together, a long unbeaten run, or start beating teams like Ipswich on Tuesday, if we're going to threaten the top 6. And I think we can, because we've shown the character that you need to be a successful side just in that afternoon yesterday, because that game was dead and buried at 2-0.
That's a great point. And this goes back to what you said, being able to fight through adversity when you talked earlier, and now show that character. And that's important. You know, good teams can fight through it. And I think we're on our way to being a good team. You know, I don't know if I want to put us in the good team level yet, but they're heading in that direction. And one of the ways you can look at it is the ability to, when things are not going your way, find a way. And they did in this match, not all 3 points, but they got something out of it. And that is very important. All right, guys, I have Dan's ratings up here. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I want to go through them and just get both of your thoughts on them. And we'll just talk about, please do go to hamian.com. to read Dan's ratings for the Fulham players. His article is entitled Hull City 2-2 Fulham Player Ratings. So let's start with Marcus Bettinelli, then I'll go to the defense, Dan. You gave Marcus Bettinelli a 7. Thoughts on Marcus Bettinelli's performance here?
I gave him a 7 because he didn't have the greatest first half. He didn't start very well with his distribution, but he had no chance with either of the goals, and he made such a crucial save in the second half. That he was deserving of more than an average rating, because I think I should explain,
you do ratings out of 10, and we've always started from the premise that everyone starts with a 6 because that's sort of an average performance. Right. You know, because it's sort of better than half is what we start with. Everyone starts with a 6, and you go from there. So I gave Marcus a 7 because that save played just a point, really, got us a point, really, as much as Kamara's goals did, because they'd have been worthless had he not produced that moment of magic.
Okay, excellent there, Dan. Giannis, your thoughts on Dan's rating of a 7? Do you agree or disagree for Marcus Bettinelli?
No, I'd give him the 7 just for that save in the second half. There's nothing he could have done about those two goals, to be honest. And it's sometimes it's not the saves you make, but the timing of the saves. And I think he's slotted in pretty well, apart from a couple of little hairy situations. But it was, I think, his fourth or fifth game back since taking over the buttonless. And I'm delighted he's in net. And certainly think he's worthy of the 7.
Okay, excellent. All right. Let's now look at Dan's ratings for the defense. And as you can imagine, it's lower than average. And Dan has just described that it starts at a 6 as being average. And some of these players are below that. But let's start with Ryan Fredericks, Dan. You gave him a 7. Tomas Kalas, you gave a 5. Tim Ream, you gave a 6. And Dennis Odoi, you gave a 5. So talk about your reasoning behind rating the defense in this manner.
Well, I gave Fredericks a 7 because he did get forward quite well in the first half. He was one of the few people to really get in an attacking position. And in the second half, I thought he was excellent at getting forward. And he covered the defense, that left hand, the whole left wing, well as well. That was the Fredericks of old, who was so devastating in both penalty boxes. I thought Kalas and Ream both found it quite difficult against those two forwards, as we've already mentioned, yep. Russ.
Absolutely.
You know, not their best afternoon, but they kept going. They weren't atrocious, but they weren't great either. I think they both admit that. And Odoi, you know, I felt Odoi has to share some culpability for that first goal. And, you know, our best passage of play came when we took him off, put on Piazza on and really went for it and put Szczesny on back to left back normally. So that was where, you know, I felt that there was too many people in the defence who had poor afternoons for them to justify high scores in that okay. marking. But it's all personal and subjective, sure. Ross.
Sure. Absolutely, Dan. Giannis, your thoughts on the defence? Do you agree with Dan or do you disagree with any players here?
No, I thought Fredericks was our best defender. He made some really good runs. The only one I may have think is I think I'd give Odoi a 4. I think he looked off colour yesterday. He looked a little nervous at times. That first goal really was a soft corner to concede, and we're not very good at conceding set pieces at the best of times. I can never understand why a team with as much skill and finesse as we have is so atrocious at attacking set pieces. This penchant for these short corners don't ever seem to work. But when we do concede corners, we look susceptible. Kalas and Ream played better in the second half. Fredericks gives you, he gives you everything. And it's interesting, really, if you know, you've seen the social media feed and what have you, that Malone's having a bit of a sticky time up at Huddersfield. And I'm wondering if, there's an opportunity in terms of getting him back on loan if he's not getting playing time up at Huddersfield. I don't think that's probably been lost on Slava. I'm sure Malone wants to play. And he'd slot right back in right now if he was available.
Okay, excellent there. Yeah, that's all right. Dan, back over to you. Let's talk about the midfield three. Kevin McDonald, you gave a 6. Stefan Johansson, you also gave a 6. But Tom Kearney, you gave a 7. So, the captain, you have a little bit above average in this match. Talk about these three players here.
Yeah, so McDonald had a good game, I felt, but I felt he could have done better. If he was in his right position, then he could have affected that second goal that Hall scored, I thought, a little bit. But he kept going. He gives you everything. So, you know, you can't rate him too disappointingly. I thought Johansson was much better in the second half than in the first half. He was poor in the first half, so that only gets him a 6. I thought Kearney was quietly very effective in the second half. He started off too deep in his You know, he was playing the ball around with the centre-halves. I hate it when he does that. He needs to be up there influencing the game at the highest possible point of the midfield for me. But I thought he was excellent. And, you know, his one-touch passing with Johansson made that goal for Kamara. And, of course, he played the ball that released Kamara for the penalty. So I felt he was deserving of that 7, Russ.
Okay, excellent there, Dan. Over to you, Giannis.
Collectively, they were a little bit out of sorts in the first half, but Dan's absolutely right. You really do need to see Tom Kearney higher up the pitch for him to have any sort of impact, and that's and that, you know, you really don't want him back there defending. That's the whole point of having Steph, Joe, and Kevin Mack back there. I thought second half was much better. Kearney moved higher up the pitch, and Kevin Mack, I mean, he got a yellow card, but he was his usual pugnacious self. Steph Joe, sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. He can be super, or he can be flat. First half, I thought he was a little flat yesterday, but he did improve. I have no disagreement with the grades, and that it was interesting because, you know, Matt coming on off and Piazon coming on, and it was a light for Piazon because he did make a difference when he came on.
He did.
He's chomping at the bit, and you know, we're getting healthy. I mean, that's the key. We're getting healthy right now, and with that window opening up in 8 hours' time, I know we're all excited to see who might come through the door. But it's good competition for the players that are there, right? It's healthy competition. Players should be nervous, and a good manager will turn around and say, look, none of your places are safe anyway. You know, I don't have an automatic on my team sheet, so therefore you'll fight for your spots if new players come in, and I expect the goods. And that'll be another thing, hopefully playing back into the OJIET situation where, you know, it's reasonable to assume we are going to get a striker in, and that's going to just add to the you know, to the pile up that is going to be the number of strikers that are going to want playing time. And you can only, you know, through probability, that you're only allowed to give them so much time, so that means it could be slim pickings for a couple of players.
Okay, excellent there. Yeah, that's all right, Dan, back to you. Let's now focus on Chiyi Ojo, Ryan Sessegnon, and Florida Ite. Ojo, you gave a 4. You also gave a 4 to Florida Ite, but you gave Ryan Sessegnon a 7. Ojo and Ite were taken off, so I understand why you're going that low, and I totally agree. Actually, I agree with all 3 ratings here. Let's talk about these 3 players.
Yeah, so it's harsh on Ojo and Ite because, you know, as I mentioned in both of their ratings, they didn't really get enough service. And if the rest of the team was functioning, maybe they'd have looked better. But you couldn't mark them any higher than that, really. I thought Sessegnon was excellent. He started, there was one moment in the first half where he carried the ball from left to right, and he was waiting for somebody to make a run, and they never really did. But he was brilliant in the second half, made a few chances, could have scored himself on another day. And, you know, he's really quite something to watch in a Fulham shirt. We should treasure the time that we have with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, Giannis just mentioned the transfer window is about to open. There are a lot of people looking at Ryan, and hopefully we get another 6 months of him at least, because he's a very special player.
Absolutely, Dan. I'm glad that you mentioned that. Are you nervous about Sessegnon for the January transfer window?
Me?
Yes.
No. It could come back to haunt me, but... you know, whilst we're still in with a chance of promotion, I'd be very surprised if he moves somewhere else. Because if he moves somewhere else, he has to get first-team football, Russ.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very brave Premier League manager who looks at it and goes, yeah, I'm going to make a 17-year-old my starting left-back or my starting left-winger.
Yeah.
You know, So, he's getting lots of football here and he's loving it. So I think he'll still be here. I hope so. But I don't have any inside knowledge of that. Sure. It's just my thoughts as a fan, really.
Yeah, it's your opinion, and I back that opinion. I'm with you too. I don't think he's going to go, but hey, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I was just curious if you were on the same wavelength as me, and it sounds like you are. All right, Giannis, over to you. Let's talk about these 3 players. We're talking about Florida Ite, Ryan Sessegnon, and Chiyi Ojo. Do you agree with Dan's marks here?
I'd probably given Ojo and Ite a 4, and they've played well. They've played well the last few weeks, but they were as flat as a 900-pound fella sitting on a pancake. Sessegnon was very good. Sessegnon was very good. I think Sess is gone. I think Sess is gone in this transfer window, but he isn't. I think we'll sell him. I thought about this last night. I think we'll sell him, but we'll get him back for the rest of the season.
Okay, so you think it could be a loan situation?
It could be a loan situation. Where big clubs gonna? No, I've given a price. I don't think we should take anything less than 40 million. I honestly don't. But I just think, because for the 17-year-old and the potential and everything else, and I think we should. I think he's the sort of player where we can look. If you're giving 75 million for Virgil Virgin Van Dijk, then I'm sorry, what's Sessegnon worth? Yeah. I mean, you know, unless Van Dijk is the coming of Alan Kennedy, John Toshack, Emily Hughes, Phil Neal, and Tommy Smith, all rolling into one, he's not worth 75 million. Exactly. So there's no way that we should settle for anything less than 40. And if we do, there's got to be a clause to let him play. Because if he goes to, let's say, City, he's not going to be starting.
I'll just say this about Van Dijk, Yanis. If Van Dijk is worth 75 million, what would Bobby Moore be worth in today's transfer market?
Bobby Moore for me is the best footballing centre back I ever saw. He, because of his ability, and I put him ahead of Beckenbauer because for me, Moore was so much calmer on the ball, and Beckenbauer was a tougher player physically, but Moore was just class. And it you're right. It does, you know. Be careful, you know. Be careful what you wish. Liverpool have shelved out a lot of money on a player who isn't worth that money. I'm sorry, and I'm not even going to listen to the notion of today's market, because you know what? If that's a market, it's a cattle market. It's not a transfer market.
Just leave it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's 75 million.
Yeah.
What is it? What it's crazy. I mean, how much are Messi and I know it's a relative, but how much are Messi and Ronaldo worth then? Or Neymar?
Well, three times that, probably. No, but I was just interested because somebody said to me yesterday, how good would Bobby Moore look in this Fulham team to play out from the back? And I thought, that is a remarkable point. As someone who never, you know, was not fortunate enough to see Moore play, I mean, obviously I've watched every video I can find of the guy. You know, he would have loved to have played under a manager like Ian Kennedy.
Sometimes you look back and you look at, you know, it's difficult in the moment. Sometimes we're critical of players and they're good their games and they're bad games. And you know, we'll throw coins at them. But sometimes you said something earlier, and I've said it before about, you know, treasuring Ryan Sessegnon while we've got him in a Fulham shirt. And I'm thinking of all those years that, you know, you follow the club and you look at players and you go, holy cow, were we ever lucky to ever have a player like that play on a team in a club like this. You know, I look at the one that always makes me laugh. It makes me laugh because people will laugh at me is Berbatov, because he had the most ridiculous skill, and you just scratch. Now, when George Best played with Rodney Marsh in the late '70s, George Best even then did stuff, and you just went, "What the hell is that?" And I know it was a second division, but it's equivalent to the Championship. And you should treasure players that play in Fulham jerseys and go, wow, they do play for our club.
I totally agree, Yanis. That's why I'm glad that Dan brought that up about just appreciating what we're seeing from Ryan Sessegnon.
Because yeah, for sure.
We don't know how much longer it's going to be, so let's just enjoy it. And I couldn't agree more, Dan. It's actually a good point, because I think we get caught up so much in the moment of each match that sometimes we forget, you know, that you got to look at the big picture. Just enjoy your time of watching this kid, because I think we're going to be looking back in 10 years' time and say, wow, he was a Fulham player in his early days. And we'll look back at him very fondly. Similar to how I look back at the Europa League team. I always look back at that all the time. And, you know, and again, I will do that the rest of my life. I will always look back at that run as something special. I follow the New England Patriots, and Yanis, you know this too. And I'm here to tell you that that Europa League run goes up with any Super Bowl championship victory that I've experienced with the New England Patriots. That's how important it was for me. And I will look at it as such for the rest of my life. And we need to remember these moments and cherish them, because you don't know how long he's going to be with Fulham. So let's just enjoy it. Let's not worry so much about what they're saying in the press about it. Let's just enjoy it. Let's see how things turn out and just enjoy watching him play. All right.
For sure.
Enough of that, guys. Let's finish off your ratings quickly. Let's talk about the substitutes, because all three of them, Dan, made an impact. I said that earlier in the show. Niskanen Cabano, you gave a 7. Lucas Piazon, I totally agree with this. You gave a 7 for his short stint. You gave Abubakar Kamara a 9. I couldn't agree more with you, Dan. He was, turns out to be the difference in the match, man of the match in my book. Let's talk about these three substitutes, because I think they all did a very good job here, especially Kamara.
Yeah, you summed up well. I think we talked enough about these three already in the podcast.
Cabano,
excellent, real live wire. Kamara, you know, he was fantastic. Did everything that you would ask for. And lovely to see Lucas out there again.
Absolutely.
Getting around. But, I felt they thoroughly deserved the ratings I came up with there.
I totally agree, Dan. Over to you, Giannis. Do you agree with Dan's assessment on the three substitutes?
Yeah, I'd have given Kamara 10 if he'd finished that chance and went over the bar. But I'll tell you, the funny thing was, I was pleased as I was that Kamara scored the 2 goals. I was ecstatic to see Piazon come on and have an impact.
That's great.
You know, isn't it refreshing in this day and age of plastic players and plastic interviewers and plastic interviewees and plastic coaches, where you got a guy that goes on social Twitter, photographs himself with, takes selfies with fans, who wants to play for the team, who's desperate to go out and play, got a serious...
And he's a lone player, and look at the passion he shows for Fulham Football Club.
Oh, I hope he stays. You want players like... You desperately want players
absolutely
like
to stay.
And I was totally delighted. Agree. Yeah, he was, I'm delighted he helped us set up the second goal. And he's a player that we can all root for. And fans, I think it's sort of funny how he pokes fun at the Reading club and the Reading fans. And it's funny, last night I was creeping on Twitter and with the Reading fans, and just in terms of their perceptions of Shawnee Aluko.
Yep.
And I was pretty vocal, Russ, that I wasn't the greatest fan of Aluko, and I thought it was robbery that we got 7.5 million for him. Absolute robbery. I mean, it was take the money and run down the highway. And they're very, very critical of Aluko's performances and his contribution to the team.
Oh, I've seen it.
Careful what you wish for. I wouldn't want Aluko back. Not when you got someone like a Piazon who wears his heart on his sleeve. And, you want players like that because there's an identity piece. I know one player that often gets really castigated, and often with good reason, but I actually rather like him just because he's who he is and wears, when he wears his shirt, you know who he's playing for. It's Lee Cattermole. He's a Sunderland player, and he goes out there and he's a blue collar worker, and he gets the lunch bucket and pail, and you know what he's going to do. And he wears his heart on his sleeve, and I think it's great. And Piazon's done that. And he's getting back to full fitness, and good, because the moving forward, I think he's going to be a critical part of our squad if we've got any hopes of finishing in the playoff spots.
Okay, excellent, Giannis. We do need to wrap up this show. Before we do, quickly on Slavisa, I would give him a 10. Would you give him anything less?
I'd give him an 8.
Give him an 8.
Maybe
okay,
well,
there
that.
You go.
I'll give him a 9. I'll give him high marks because he made the decisions when he did, but he'd lose the mark because it was clear. You could see early on in the game something was clearly wrong with this team, even though it was the same. You wouldn't have believed it was the same team to play down at Cardiff, but there was something missing. Something was wrong, and I was reading an article, Dan and Russ, about the Celtic Rangers game yesterday. Which finished 0-0. I think a very good result.
Yeah, it's a terrible game of football.
Yeah, just well, I mean, Scottish Premier League. It's, you might as well be the Faroe Islands third division, to be honest. But there was an incident, or there were incidents in the change rooms.
Sorry to everyone in Scotland who listens to this podcast.
Oh, well, I mean, well, look, there's a reason Scotland have never won a World Cup. There's a reason they're not going to the World Cup. There's a reason. I mean, they're just, anyway. But
sorry, you know, Tom Kearney and Kevin McDonald, we love you.
Yeah, really. I know. You know, Airdrie United against Brecon in front of four fans and a dog called Roger. But there was oh, no, that's throwing me off. The Celtic Rangers, Marty, the coach, was talking about an incident at halftime. Yep. where the players got back in the change room, and there was obviously an exchange of opinions, and it got pretty very, very heated. And sometimes the players are the best police in the second half, and I did watch the game. Rangers, I thought, were much, much better in the second half and really should have nicked it. And I think, you know, players are professionals as well, and at halftime, Slava would have given them you-know-what for, but I'm sure the players would have been very angry by what they'd done.
Sure.
And there was at times, you don't even have to go back in the change rooms and say anything. They know. And the two subs would have told the story. He wasn't happy. The players wouldn't have been happy. Let's fix this. We've got all these fans coming. It's a long journey up to Schmull. It really is. And there really is nothing up there. So you go up there. Let's give them a second half. Let's get back in this game. Let them go home at least half happy. And they, to their enormous credit, they did. So hopefully we can take this forward to my friends Ipswich on Tuesday night.
Okay. Dan, just want to mention one last time. You would give Savisa an 8?
Yeah, for the reasons that Yanis has outlined at length.
Okay. All right. And I probably went a little above and beyond. But yes, I understand why you guys rated him that way. All right, real quick, just let's talk a little bit about Ipswich Town. Just your thoughts, Dan, real quickly about this upcoming match, and then we'll wrap up the show.
Yeah, Ipswich will be tough. They're still up there in unbelievably, they're still up there in terms of the playoff and promotion picture. I can't really understand that. But it'll be a tough game. We know how McCarthy's going to play. Slavisa has even said that already. We have to be ready for that. And hopefully we can put our best performance together for the game against Ipswich.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, it's over to you.
Well, I think we'll have our best lineup for this, and we'll come down there and we'll give you. We'll give you a walkball. We'll give you a good spanking, calling ourselves the Cottagers. It's going to be, you know what, Russ? It's not going to be an easy game. We went down there earlier this season. We beat them 2-0, and it could have been 10. But I do have immense respect for Mick McCarthy. They lost 2-1 to Derby County. That's not, Winnell got a double for Derby. It's no disgrace. But I think it's going to be an interesting game. You know, let's see. I think so much of it is momentum, isn't it? I mean, I know it's a broken record, but, you know, again, transfer window tomorrow. Yeah, are there going to be any signings tomorrow? You know, and is there a possibility that a new signing might start on Tuesday? Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't it be nice to have Dwight Gale starting for us on Tuesday night?
I don't think you're going to see that, yes, but who knows? I shouldn't say who knows, but we shall see. All right, guys, I do have to wrap up this show. Dan, thank you so much for jumping in the last minute. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure, mate. Nice to be with you. Thanks, Ross. Thanks. Yanis, Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year, Dan. It was fantastic.
Happy New Year to you, Yanis. But it is time to go. For Yanis Shanaeus and Dan Crawford from HammyEnd.com, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.